The Baseball Tonight podcast is presented by LinkedIn Jobs.
Way out of here. Oh,
goodness. This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, June 30th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home in New York. And today, Taylor, is a terrible day. Okay, it's a terrible day of choices because the Vanderbilt Commodores, my Commodores, will play the deciding game of the College World Series against Mississippi State at 7 p.m. And that's pretty much the same time that Shohei Ohtani, the greatest show on earth, is going to be stepping into the batter's box for his first plate appearance before he goes out and pitches against the Yankees. It's not fair. And these two events are going to take place at the same time. My binary brain can't handle it.
Buster, you got to get on the dual screen train. I mean,
I don't like that.
I know you don't.
I'm a focused person, okay?
All right.
I gotta focus on one thing. So I guess I'll just wait for Ohtani's plate appearance and switch over to the Commodores and then switch back when Ohtani's pitching. But I'm going to miss some stuff, you know?
Yeah. I got a question for you. Are you going to, I mean, this is a big night for Vanderbilt. They're looking to be the first team since 2011 to repeat in the College World Series. Are you going to stay up for the whole thing if it's tight?
What, are you kidding? Of course.
All right. Absolutely. Just making sure.
I know. I'm normally an early to bed guy, but when Vanderbilt's going for the title, you got to go for it. All right. Last night in the Bronx, Ohtani put on a show as the Angels were getting thumped by the Yankees. Aaron Judge separating the Yankees from the Angels early in the game.
High drive, center field and deep. Ward back, track, wall. See ya. Into Monument Park. A two-run home run for Judge.
Michael Kay on the Yes Network, that homer coming just hours after Brian Cashman, the Yankees general manager, had very blunt criticism of the team's performance this year. We'll be talking about that with Tyler Kepner of the New York Times. Ohtani came to the plate in the top of the third.
Here's the next delivery, and this ball is lifted high, and it's hit deep out into right center field, and it's out of here. Ohtani has done it again. Back-to-back games in New York. That is his AL-leading 27th home run of the season. Angels get a little closer. It's 5-3, and tonight, again, it's showtime.
Angels Radio AM 830. I ran in, told my son. He just did the biggest smile on his face. He couldn't believe Ohtani did it again. But here's the thing. Ohtani wasn't done.
That one's hit well. And that one's gone again. He did it again. Get off me! Bring that fastball into my hands! Get off me! Man.
Look at this spot.
Yeah.
And those hands.
That was so funny. Matt Viscursion on the call with Mark Gubiza on the Angels Television Network. Taylor, our friend Matt, my good friend Matt, he was like, oh my God! I loved his voice cracking.
Total excitement, a little bit of panic, and you know he's an even keeled gentleman, so it's exciting to hear him being excited like that.
Everybody in the sports world watching Ohtani, J.J. Watt tweeting out the other day about Ohtani's case for MVP as he wrote, "What argument can make for any other player than Ohtani?" A great game in Atlanta last night, Mets and Braves. The Braves had a 3-0 lead, but in the top of the seventh inning, this happened.
1-2. It's a high fly ball deep toward left center field. Back goes Heredia. Here's near the wall, and it is gone. A home run. James McCann has tied the game. Charlie Morton left a pitch right over the center of the plate, and McCann crushed it. It's his seventh home run, and the Mets have come right back here in the seventh.
That from WCBS. The Mets rally continued.
Lindor, it's a line drive, base hit into left center field, over the head of Swanson, rounding third, scoring easily is Peraza. Francisco Lindor with a two-out RBI single, and the Mets have taken a 4-3 lead here in the top of the seventh.
And they would win that game. Meanwhile, in Washington, Kyle Schwarber did it again.
Kyle Schwarber, first pitch, belted. Zoom goes Kyle Schwarber.
Charlie Slows on the Nationals radio network. Washington wins 4-3 for Schwarber. 12 homers in the last 10 games. In Milwaukee, the Brewers separating themselves in the National League Central. They took a lead in the bottom of the first.
And the pitch. Christian lines one to the gap in right center. In there for extra bases. Around third is Willy Adames. Cruising in the second with a run-scoring double. Christian Yelich and the crew has the lead.
That, the great Bob Uecker, 620 WTMJ. The Brewers went on to win 2-1, and a lot of questions now about whether or not the Cubs are going to be sellers before the deadline. They drifted to 5 games behind Milwaukee in the Central. The Blue Jays, yesterday, a big day against the Mariners.
Oh, hits it high and deep into left center. This one's going to go. Get out of here. Gone. Boom is shot with a 3-run home run. He breaks the tie immediately.
And the final score there would be 9-3. Buck Martinez, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Before that game, the Blue Jays acquired reliever Adam Simber, outfielder Corey Dickerson in a swap with the Miami Marlins. Absolutely love this trade for the Blue Jays. They're going to be talking about that with David Schoenfield. Nolan Arenado just keeps on doing it in the field.
And among their young hitters, barehanded. Oh! Remarkable play from the Cardinal third baseman. Holy smokes.
Bear hands it, somehow gets rid of it quick enough to get Pavin at first base.
Dan McLaughlin with that call. The Cardinals win that game. Dodgers and the Giants late last night. Max Muncy getting a big hit for LA.
Here's a 3-1. Fly ball, center field. Duggar going back at the wall. Gone! Muncy's 17th home run of the year. The 8th surrendered by Gausman. And the Dodgers lead 3-0.
My old friend Charlie Steiner with a call of the big moment in the Dodgers in a game that the Dodgers would eventually win. Vanderbilt guy Walker Buehler was dominant. 6 2/3 innings, 3 hits, and no runs. Kenley Jansen with a save. He finished the month of June with a 0 ERA in 10 1/3 innings, 8 for 8. In save chances. Some other notes. Seattle Mariners pitcher Hector Santiago was suspended 10 games and fined by Major League Baseball for having a foreign substance in his glove. It was announced on Tuesday. We'll get into that with Dave. The family of Los Angeles Angels pitcher Tyler Skaggs filed 2 lawsuits against the club and 2 former employees claiming negligence over his drug-related death 2 years ago. Attorneys announced Tuesday morning. Los Angeles Dodgers right-hander Trevor Bauer is facing allegations of assault by a woman stemming from previous sexual encounters earlier this year. The Pasadena Police Department said it is investigating the alleged assault, which it says occurred around the middle of May. The case could be turned over to the district attorney's office as soon as Wednesday, a source told ESPN, at which point a decision would be made on whether it will move forward. Now, before we speak to Tyler Kepner, the New York Times, and David Schoenfield of ESPN, you should check out ESPN Plus for all the Euro 2020 action. There was another pair of crazy games yesterday. The semifinals start on Friday at noon Eastern time. Sign up now to watch at ESPNplus.com and check out the Hoop Collective with Brian Windhorst. Brian, Kevin Pelton, and Royce Young discuss the confounding ability of the Clippers to win elimination games on the road and the Suns' inability to close. You can follow the Hoop Collective on your favorite podcast app.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show, mate.
Welcome to the show. Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby.
You're in the show with David Schoenfeld.
David Schoenfeld covers baseball for ESPN, and I don't know, are you going to have to give up that open, Dave? You know, when we talk about the show and welcome to the show and the whole thing is... You're not the show anymore, okay?
No, that is definitely not the case. And, yeah, I don't know if Shohei Ohtani has copyrighted that. He might be suing us here for stealing his nickname, yeah.
The greatest show on earth, Shohei Ohtani, who just every day does things that amaze us. You know, homers in that his first game of the series between the Angels and the Yankees in Yankee Stadium. Last night hits two homers, and I love, you know, I get to work with Matt Bescursion every week, and, you know, he's such an even-keeled person, and I love how he was absolutely overwhelmed by Ohtani's second home run last night, a laser. It looked like it was hit about 500 miles per hour in going out of the ballpark, and Matt, you could just hear him. He was like, I don't know what to say.
It's Buster, you nailed it. We have never seen anything like this. I mean, he hit the home run last night. I think I was eating dinner, so I hadn't turned the game on yet. And, you know, I got my, you know, app up there with the scores, and I see he hit a home run, and I just yell out to my wife, Ohtani hit another one. And then later in the game, he hit a second. And the most impressive play, did you see the last out of the game? Where they're down, what was the score? They're down five runs, two outs. He hits a ground ball to first base. He's busting his butt down the line. He almost beats out a routine grounder to first base, you know. And Joe Madden at the end of the game was like, well, I admire the hustle. I didn't like that little leap at first base at the end, but I mean, the power, the speed. The flair. We haven't even talked about his pitching. We have never seen this. It is the greatest show on earth.
Yeah, and he's pitching tonight. I'm so excited, and I'm torn, and I'll leave that conversation to Tyler Kepner, another Vanderbilt graduate, who's coming up here in a second, about what are we going to do? Ohtani's pitching on one channel. Vanderbilt's playing on another channel. It's going to be quite a night. I wish I could remember who I heard this from, because I was not the first person to have this thought. And I've been using it in recent days, and I wish I could give credit to the first person I heard say this, but I think it was dead on, that we have to stop talking about Ohtani as, you know, the Babe Ruth, the current day, modern day Babe Ruth. And we really have to start thinking of him as being the modern day Bo Jackson, you know, a guy who masters two completely set of athletic skills, you know, to hit a baseball the way that he does and to pitch the way that he does. And that clearly has inspired the likes of Kevin Durant to go to Yankee Stadium, other athletes going to Yankee Stadium on the days, you know, that the Angels are in town and they're playing New York. That to me might be the most apt thing. And you just hope that it's not just this short window where Ohtani's great at these two things for two or three years, the way Bo was.
Yeah, we'll have to find out. And I think the difference here, I love the comparison, because I think from a pure athletic standpoint, Bo is probably the only one that compares, right? Because Ohtani, we're seeing him hit the ball further than anybody. He's basically as fast as anybody. I think the difference, though, Bo wasn't really a baseball player. He lived only on his athleticism, his, you know, the raw power, you know, despite the speed, he wasn't really a great base runner. He didn't walk much. You know, he played more left field than center field. Ohtani is a baseball player with all this athleticism. And that's why I think he's on another level than we saw from Bo. Excitement, no doubt. You know, those two are sort of unique in that area. But Ohtani is a baseball player It's just, I can't even put it into words what he's doing.
You know what I love too, and I thought about this last night watching Ohtani in the dugout. You know, the Angels are losing 10-5, and or 11-5, I think, at one point. And when he's hit the second home run, and he had the biggest grin on his face, and all the players around him had the biggest grin on his face. Thank God we're past the old school, you know, thinking of, well, you got to, you know, wipe that smile off your face. We're losing a ball game. We've gotten to the point now where a Fernando Tatis Jr., Ronald Acuna Jr., they can play with joy and no one gets on them about it. And I, you know, to watch Ohtani last night, to see his joy was so much fun. And again, makes me excited for the Derby.
Yeah, no, and remember when he first came up, you know, we didn't see much emotion from him.
No.
You know, now he's been around, he's letting it out. I think he's probably a little bit in awe of himself right now, and as he should be. I mean, Buster, I think I wrote the other night that his swing is like a combination of Jim Tomei's power and Ichiro's artistry. You know, it's such an iconic swing where he doesn't really even lift that front foot. He just twists on it. His upper body strength is just absolutely amazing, the way he can just use his arms and waist to drive the ball. I don't think I've seen a swing like it. It's so unique, and that's another reason that he's so wonderful.
And someone else who's wonderful right now is Kyle Schwarber. 12 homers in the last 10 games, another home run in another Nationals victory last night. I talked with Jessica Mendoza yesterday about my own theory that Schwarber is, you know, he's always been a great hitting savant, but he's someone who can get into his own head. He's kind of a tinkerer. And I made some calls yesterday because I wanted to make sure I was on solid ground on that. And I talked to people who know him and they say, absolutely. You know, yeah. The question is, we sit here today as he goes through this stretch of success, which really, as you remember, was a lot like his second half in 2019 when he went crazy.
That's right.
He was great for the Cubs in the second half of 2019. The question that folks I talked to yesterday were saying is, we'll see how long he trusts it. Because he tends to be someone who will say, oh boy, you know, I went 1-for-4 yesterday instead of 3-for-4. I didn't hit a home run. Maybe I better move my hands this way. Yeah. And that's not a criticism. I think that's just the nature of a sport that's played out every day. And I hope, like Kevin Gausman, you know, he's sort of settled in emotionally in trusting his success.
Yeah. Hey, to your point, he had a quote after Monday's game when he homered twice against the Mets. He said something along the lines of, I'm just trying to hit stupid right now, meaning I'm trying not to think about it. Exactly to your point. So, yeah, can he stay in that mindset? Who knows? The first time he goes 1-for-10. Yeah. Does he start doing the tinkering? I was looking at some of his numbers. He kind of struggled a little bit last year against fastballs, which he's always hit pretty well. He's back to crushing them again. So, you know, I don't know if the Cubs thought maybe his bat speed had slowed down or whatever, but that's not the issue. And, yeah, 12 home runs in 10 games. Only Albert Bell had done that. 16 in 18 games. Only Sammy Sosa and Barry Bonds have ever done that. So, I mean, he's one of now 7 guys to hit 16 home runs in a month. So this is an all-time hot streak.
Very interesting decision by Major League Baseball yesterday. Hector Santiago gets a 10-game suspension. And when we saw what happened in the Mariners game on Sunday, where they take his glove, they examine it, they confiscate it, and we all assumed after, you know, he was ejected, that the glove would be sent, you know, via FedEx to the Major League Baseball's central offices, and scientists or lawyers or somebody would try to break down what was in the glove. Very interesting. Yesterday, he gets suspended for 10 games with pay. And the word is that Major League Baseball did not inspect what was in the glove, despite the fact that Santiago, his manager, Scott Servais, talked about the fact that everything in the glove was rosin. I thought it was an absolutely lawyerly decision by Major League Baseball. Nope, we're not going to look at what's in the glove. We're going to go on what we heard from the umpires, which was there was sticky stuff in the glove. And oh, by the way, when we sent out the memo on June 15th, we mentioned you can use rosin. You can't put it in the glove. So the fact that it was in the glove means we don't have to ask the question about what the substance was. He broke the rule that we sent out on June 15th, and we're standing by our umps. Based on the memo on June 15th, I don't blame him.
No, that's a good point, because we saw the video of them bagging the glove in the plastic bag like it was a piece of evidence from a murder investigation or something. Well, yeah, I guess that's the easy way out, right? You know, and if it's there in the memo, he broke the rules. So I know he's appealing it, but I don't think this is the one he's going to win.
No, the one thing, and I've heard this from a number of executives, I heard it from some players in the last week. I do wonder if, as people assess the penalty that he has now, 10 games with pay, it's going to underscore the fact that, you know, this isn't a very serious penalty. And if you're someone who's struggling to spin the ball and you're a guy who's kind of a fringy type player, maybe it'd be worth the risk, because there's not a lot of penalty if you actually get caught. I want to ask you. Go ahead.
No. And if you think about it, if you're like the last guy on the pitching staff, the guy who goes up and down between AAA and the majors, you know, you get caught, you get paid. Otherwise, you might be back down in AAA making AAA money. So you can actually make more money. But look, you know, you got to have some loyalty to your teammates, because you're not replaceable on the roster. So if you do get suspended, your team's playing a man short. So the team is hurt, even if the individual is not.
Yeah, I never thought about it that way, but you're exactly right. Imagine if you are like the 15th guy and you're called up for a doubleheader, okay?
Yeah.
And you're the extra player and you're sitting there going, man, I'm going back down to, I'm going back down to Burlington after the game. Anyway, you know what? I'm just going to put some pine tar in my glove. I'm going to be inspected. I'll be suspended. But I get 10 days of major league pay and service time.
Well, yeah. The way these teams operate, you know, that those relievers, they come up, they have one bad game, they're back down. So then you're thinking, well, if I see if I can get away with it, I have a good outing, maybe I get to stay on the roster if I don't get caught. So, yeah, that's good. Look, this is not going to go away all season. We're having a little fun here, but pitchers are going to try to find ways to get away with this.
Yep. And as we heard from Trevor Bauer during the Sunday night game, he basically indicated that's already what he was seeing. And I got to say, I've seen a couple pitchers in watching games where I thought, yep, I just saw those fingertips. I just saw the little wrap around the forearm. I kind of wonder what was going on. I wanted to ask you about this. I thought that was interesting yesterday. The Jays trade for Adam Simber, the reliever from the Marlins, essentially the price they paid was taking on Corey Dickerson's remaining salary, which was just under $5 million. I love this trade, because what it signals to me is that the Blue Jays are looking at the American League East landscape. You know, they're 6.5 games out, but they just got George Springer back. They have a great offensive team. The Red Sox have been a great surprise this year, but no one looks at them as being a juggernaut. I feel like the Rays are saying, you know what? We got a shot. And so we're going to do a proportional response. We're going to plug a hole in our bullpen. We'll add a veteran hitter as well during the course of this deal. And we're going to give ourselves a chance moving forward. I love this trade.
Yeah. Simber's a nice underrated reliever. Doesn't throw hard, but he's a side armer. 2.88 ERA this year.
Sinker ball, no foreign substance concerns.
Right. You know, and yeah, like you said, their bullpen's had issues. That's been their biggest problem. And I'm with you. You know, I'm not completely buying the Red Sox yet. Tampa Bay, you wonder, you know, without Tyler Glass now, can that rotation, you know, get enough innings without wearing the bullpen down? So, and, you know, that second wild card is definitely in play in the American League. So I expect the Jays to make a couple more moves. And they got, you know, while the Red Sox and the Yankees are pushed right up against that luxury tax, the Rays or the Blue Jays have some room to play with. So I think they'll make another addition or two here.
Yeah, and when I saw this as well, I thought, you know what, Starling Marte, there's a chance he's going to be a Yankee before we hit the All-Star break. Because the Marlins are basically announced the word, we are sellers.
Yep.
And Starling Marte hitting .295, 6 homers, having a nice season. But he's making $12.5 million. If the Yankees make a trade for him, they would go over the competitive balance tax threshold. I don't think that's going to happen. As you know, though, you can arrange a trade where if the Yankees gave more prospects, they could ask the Marlins to absorb some of Marte's money, and you could bring him on board. And if I'm Brian Cashman, And I know the price would be high to make a deal with the Marlins at this moment, but maybe you do that and you arm your team, you know, for the next stretch of games, all those games against the Red Sox after the All-Star break. And you know what? If on June or July 25th, you're out of the race, you can flip Starling Marte and get some return for him by trading him to another contender.
That's a great point. I hadn't thought about that. And I know when I was looking into this, you know, a few days ago, Marte's real, the Yankees need a center fielder.
Yep.
No doubt. And he's really the only legit center fielder who looks like he's going to be out there. So the Yankees really do need to, you know, add him.
All right. Before you go, I mentioned at the top of the show that Trevor Bauer is being investigated. This is a situation based on what I you know, read last night, and, you know, I sent out a couple texts this morning. They haven't gotten answered. We're taping here at about 9 o'clock Eastern time. I just feel like I need more information, Dave, before I give opinions. I mean, we give opinions left and right on this podcast all the time, but I feel like I need more information. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. This isn't one that I care to, you know, dig into at all. Let it play out. We have a judicial system, you know, to look into this. And that's how, you know, we might be headed down that road and bring all the evidence, and then we can become judge and jury.
All right. Well, think of a new last name now that your last name may have already been trademarked. So
I'm happy to sell my nickname to Shohei Ohtani.
Thanks, Dave.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Tyler Kepner covers baseball for the New York Times. And Tyler, I noticed today that you have your Vanderbilt hat.
Yes, sir.
Which leads perfectly into the question that I had scripted for you, because today there's a real quandary in baseball. If you know, if you're an alum of Mississippi State or Vanderbilt and you see what's going on in baseball, the question is, with the Vanderbilt Mississippi State game at 7 o'clock, it's the exact same time that Shohei Ohtani is pitching against the Yankees and probably come to bat in that first inning. Which game will you be watching up in New Hampshire?
Well, the great thing now is that you don't have to choose, right? You can have have your phone watching the MLB app or whatever, and then watch ESPN on TV or vice versa, depending on how the signal's coming in. So yeah, I'll probably do both at once. I got to admit, you can't miss the Ohtani show. You can't miss your team in the College World Series finals. So I got to do both.
Exactly. And I've done a couple of shows the last couple of days. They've asked me about, you know, the Vanderbilt team's progress. And I've said repeatedly that I feel like the stupid baseball player is ruined for all of us sports writers. Vanderbilt has long been known as a sports writer factory. Lee Jenkins, Skip Bayless, Dave Schein, and yourself. We were the pride of the Vanderbilt sports community, and Tim Corbin and the baseball players have ruined it for us.
Yes, I know, right? It's, we used to be the ones to go off into the sports world and mingle with the best of the best. And now they are the best of the best. I always tell the guys when I see them in the big leagues, I'm like, you guys had no idea what it was like in the mid-90s where, you know, we would, the stadium was completely different. There was just a few metal bleachers and metal benches, and we'd sit on top of the dugout with a microphone pointed to the boom box, and that was your sound system. And they weren't terrible. I mean, they were usually around 500, but like there was no shot at Omaha or anything like that. I mean, that was for other people.
Yeah, and about once every 4 or 5 years, there might be talk of one of the guys maybe being a candidate to be picked in the first round, as opposed to every year having, you know, lining up, two, three guys to be picked in the first round. It really is incredible.
In your years there? Because I had one guy who went to the big leagues when I was there. That was Josh Paul. Did you had Joey Cora? Is anybody else?
Yeah, Joey Cora, and before he got there, Scott Sanderson. You know, was, I can't remember what round he was picked in, but he was a highly regarded pitcher. Yeah, right. But Joey Cora and I were in the same freshman class at Vanderbilt.
and he was a shortstop, and he wound up being a first round pick of the Seattle Mariners. So, yeah, now they are the factory at the school for sure.
Yep.
So last night, Brian Cashman, the Yankees general manager, spoke with the reporters about how the team has been struggling. Give a listen.
I think when you're playing bad, and we are playing as bad as you can possibly be playing, it looks like that. I know they urgently want to get on track, but I also know that we suck right now, as bad as you can be. So trying to knock ourselves out of that is obviously the effort, but until we get online and start flying high again, it's going to look bad, and it plays bad, and it stinks to the high heavens, and right now we got to own that.
And Tyler, I really feel like this is standard operating procedure for Brian Cashman to come out and speak with reporters when the team is stinking like this.
It is. Yeah. I mean, you know, we both covered him for a long time. And he has that old baseball sensibility of, you know, standing up when things are going bad, and maybe being a little harder to find when they're going good. So it's not surprising. It's also not surprising the candor that he shows there. I mean, he's been known for that, especially for the last 10 or 12 years or so, for really saying what's on his mind, and there's no use denying it. It's definitely true. He can say things in a little more of an unvarnished way than Aaron Boone. Aaron Boone's got to face these guys every single day, and Aaron's job is relationships with the players, and Cass often just tells it like it is.
So a question I get asked a lot when I do radio shows, I'm sure you do too, is Aaron Boone in trouble? And I always sort of pivot to, that's not really the important question. I think the important question is, what does Hal Steinbrenner feel about Brian Cashman? What will he feel at the end of this year if they don't make the playoffs, which obviously be a huge disappointment because the Yankees were regarded as favorites to win the American League going into spring training. People in the organization are confounded by the struggles that they've had. And Aaron Boone isn't going to be in the front line of that decision-making. I think if Brian Cashman continues as general manager, Aaron Boone is going to be his manager, but the question is going to be whether or not Hal still believes in Brian. You agree, disagree?
I think you're right. And I think it really points to the big change in the Yankees philosophy in the last 20 years or 30 years. I mean, we still think of the Yankees as the dramatic Steinbrenner years where everybody was, George Steinbrenner years where everybody's being fired. But as I think you pointed out recently, the Yankees haven't fired a manager in season since what, 1990? Bucky Dent, I think. I think that's right.
Yep, and, it is, and right. So, and they have not fired a coach. I asked this to Cashman a couple weeks ago. I said, have you ever fired a coach in midseason? Nope. He doesn't believe in it.
Yeah, it's like, I can't remember either. So that just speaks to a real stability within the organization, and you understand why. I mean, they've had winning seasons every year since 93. They're always in it. But I do wonder, I guess, if, and not making a judgment on this, but whether it's stability or it's inertia, like he won't make a move, or he's Hal Steinbrenner, or he can't conceive of making a move. Because Brian's really great. I mean, Brian will be hired as soon as if he ever leaves this job, he'll have his pick of the next job that comes up for sure. He's probably part of the solution, but they can't really find what's going wrong right now. And in many cases around the league, you know, the manager or the GM would get fired right about now.
Or they would fire a coach or make changes. And, you know, a recent example that the Mets fired their hitting coaches 23 games into the season. I looked this up today. At the time they did that, the Mets had a team batting average of 240 with a 688 OPS, 3.3 runs per game. Since then, they've hit 223 with a 671 OPS and a little bit more runs per game, 3.7. Brian, I know, is very skeptical about the impact of midseason changes. I'm asking the same question that you are, where I've gone back and forth on this. I thought the Mets firing the hitting coaches that early on a small sample size was kind of stupid. And if they wanted to make a change, they should have done it in spring training. But when you look at a team like the Yankees, where they're making mistakes repeatedly, the same things, base running, that sort of thing, you do wonder if a shakeup and is something that might help. I mean, here's Giancarlo Stanton the other day talk about, in so many words, like, you know, we haven't stepped up. You know, we haven't answered the bell in some of these games. It was almost like he was talking about some kind of an energy.
Yeah, it's like we didn't show up, I think, is as I already said.
Right.
And that's the kind of stuff you don't hear much. And you also don't hear much you don't hear many people say, like what Aaron Boone said the other day, is our season's on the line right now. Aaron Boone's been around baseball his whole life, since game 78 for a team that's over 500. And actually had its number five replacement starter on the mound, Michael King, that night. So it wasn't like he's saying our season's on the line right now and we have, you know, our ace going. And then they went out and lost. And I thought about that and I thought, well, he is smart enough to know that in New York, as Brian Cashman always says, it's 162 one-game season. So the news cycle for a comment like that lasts, you know, 24 hours max. But it did speak to an urgency and a borderline sense of panic, maybe. And you're right. If they don't start turning it around, like I said, in most cases, you probably just bring in a new guy to shake things up, whatever you want to say, to send a message, just to change something for the sake of change. But Brian has never really believed in change for the sake of change. And you're right. I think now the question is how sick of it does Hal get? And we don't know that because we haven't seen him make irrational moves or any kind of in-season moves at all.
Here's what I would do if I were in Cashman's shoes and see what you think about this. Look, he's not going to make a change with the manager or coach. We know that. But I think there's a clear need on the team for a legitimate center fielder. So you call the Marlins now, who basically announced to the world yesterday with that trade they made of Adam Simber, Corey Dickerson, that they have raised the white flag. They've given up this year. So you call them and you say, look, we're going to make a deal for Starling Marte. Tell us what it's going to cost for you to pay his salary, because they want to stay under the competitive balance tax. And you get Marte, who's not a perfect fit. He's another right-handed hitter in a lineup that's way too right-handed, but they got to get a legitimate center fielder so they can return Aaron Judge to right field. And you get Marte and you play him for the next 3 weeks of games. And then you get through those two series against the Red Sox, the four games right after the All-Star break, and then the series up in Boston. And then on July 26th, you make a determination. Are we buyers or sellers? And you know what? At that point, you could say, if you're, you know, 10 games out of first place, you could say, we're going to flip Starling Marte now. We're going to put him back out in the market and get some return. But you bolster the team for the short term, take your run, you wait for the team to declare itself, and then you react accordingly.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm not sure that they don't need more than that, though. I mean, this rotation is really troublesome to me when you look at I mean, I'm going to still say that Gerrit Cole is an ace. I mean, he's had five starts since the sticky stuff manifesto, and three have been great, two have not been. I still think he's great. You have to assume he's great. But the rest of them, I mean, you have Michael King on the back end, who has never won as a starter in the big leagues in 10 tries. And the three guys in the middle have pitched I don't know about Tyon last night. I mean, I know he didn't do so well, but he won. But basically, they've pitched to the level of a four starter collectively. When you talk about Herman and Tyon and Montgomery, they're not giving you much confidence on a day-to-day basis. They can do much better than average. So if you're saying that you've got one good starting pitcher, three average at best starting pitchers, and one who's never won as a starter, that's tough to get things going when the rotation's that bad. So they can go get Starling Marte, and your plan makes a lot of sense because they need someone who could diversify the offense and run a little bit.
Yep.
But their problems are much worse, I think, than the center fielder.
Well, then maybe you acquire a starting pitcher. Again, I think it has to be a depth guy, a guy who's you're going to feel consistently can get you into the fifth inning. You know, I don't necessarily know if there's a number one or number two that you want to pay for in the current market. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right. They could probably use some help on that, that front as well. We'll see what they do. Before you go, I wanted to ask you about this. On this podcast, Todd Radom is the Todd father, you know, the graphic artist. He's designed uniforms all over the place. But you also have a great sense of style, and you have an eye for the artistic.
Well, baseball style. I don't know about that. I put a baseball in front of that. But yeah, okay. I'm not Jack Curry when it comes to well dressed, stylish. But yeah, Baseball style, yes.
You love the artistic side of baseball. And after you reading your piece in the New York Times today, I recommend everyone read it, where you make your All-Star selections. It's pretty clear you hate the All-Star jerseys. Explain.
I really do. I feel like it was one of those things baseball could not just leave well enough alone. Like one of the, and maybe they're tone deaf, but they don't know how cool it is. But I've always loved, Buster, that when you play the All-Star game, you see all the uniforms on the field at once. I think it's visually beautiful to see the green of the A's and the orange of the Orioles and the Dodger blue and the Yankee pinstripes all on the same field. It's a shout out to the fans at home when you see your uniform on TV. I mean, I remember when you're a kid and you're rooting for a team. I was a big Phillies fan as a kid, and you'd see that Phillies uniform on the field at the All-Star game. It just meant a little. It meant something, and just it looked so great to have all those uniforms on the field at once. The birds on the bat, the tomahawk, all of it. I just don't get why they would do it, other than obviously to sell more jerseys, but they're going to sell those jerseys anyway because they're, you know, they always have a specialty jersey for the home run derby and stuff. So it really, I don't know. It's just another one of those examples of baseball not quite getting what makes baseball special. Some of the little quirks that are important to a lot of diehard fans. And also the uniforms they're going to be wearing are really, really ugly. Like I would have been a little more okay with it if they had been good looking uniforms, like put a little mountain range on there or do something for Colorado. But boy, these uniforms are just beyond the fact that they're obliterating that tradition. These uniforms are so ugly.
Bad softball jerseys, right?
Yes, bad softball. I mean, the white ones to be white, and then they have like a vertical on the left side. They got a vertical abbreviation of the city. So let's say, you know, COL Colorado vertically in red. And then with the Rockies CR logo superimposed over them. And that's kind of it. They've got an American flag on a shoulder patch for some reason. And a little trim on the bottom of the sleeve. But that's really it. They just really look thrown together and tacky. I don't know. What does Todd think? Have you talked to him about this?
Well, I was just going to say, I'm going to put that on the to-do list. We have two things for Friday, Taylor, if you can help me remember. We got to ask Todd Radom about the All-Star jerseys, and we got to ask Hembo about his pick of the Brewers before the season started, because, you know, those are our two resident geniuses on those two fronts.
Noted. We got it down.
All right. All right, Tyler, get out. Enjoy the dogs out in the sunshine in New Hampshire, and remember to bring some water because it is hot and muggy up there.
Yes, let's bring home a championship tonight for the Commodores.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, tell everyone, be quiet. The dogs, you're not allowed to bark from 7 to 10 o'clock until Vanderbilt hoists the trophy.
Three since 2014. I will take it. Love it. Go Coach Corbs. Coach Corbs is from Wolfboro, New Hampshire. It's just a town or two over from where we are. So he's.
I delivered bagels there back in the day.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I'll see you, Tyler.
Yeah, man.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for a Wednesday. First up, we have Vincent Hanam at VS Hanam. Vince writes in, am I crazy for thinking 61 could happen this season? I don't think so. What do you think?
No, I mean, shoot, you know, Otani with 27, we're just about at the halfway mark. If he goes on this burst of games, and you know that if Otani was close to that sort of a number, 60-61 at the end of the year, that the Angels, Joe Maddon, Otani would probably be like, you know what, let's go for broke. Let's try to make it happen. I would say this, Mike Trout is terrible at making predictions. I asked him before the year about what Otani could accomplish, and he goes, you know what, if he has a big year, he could hit 30-plus home runs, win 10-plus games. Come on, Trout. You know, he was not close on the home runs. No, actually, that was an amazing prediction by him early on. He was talking about how great Otani was going to be this year. I don't think anybody expected him to be this great, though.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go to Don Irvine at Don Irvine. Don writes in, now that it looks like the Nationals will be buyers and not sellers, who are they likely to pursue by the trade deadline? Looks like Max Scherzer probably not going anywhere. We've been talking about that for a week. So who do they go after?
Yeah, and people talked about Kyle Schwarber could land someplace. That obviously isn't going to happen as long as they stay in contention. Look, this is a case where I think we have to wait until about July 20th to determine exactly what the Nationals' needs are going to be. A lot of contenders are going to be like that, especially with this broad reassessment we've talked about in recent days. The teams are doing of pitchers and whether or not they're pitchers who have to rely on foreign substances to be successful.
Good point. Next up, DGB, Debbie Gammons Brown. She writes in, are you buying the Red Sox as a legitimate top three team in baseball?
Top three teams. I think they have the potential for that. It depends on what Chris Sale is when he comes back. And I think he will come back at some point this year. Is it going to be kind of a, you know, 4 or 5 ERA type Chris Sale as he comes back from a significant elbow surgery? And I'm curious about who they get before the trade deadline. But the fact is, I mean, when you have a record of 49-31, you're 18 games over 500. You're talking about a team that's basically on a 98 win pace. That is a team that is at the very least excellent, especially with its offense, and they could get better. Top three, I still think of the Padres, the Dodgers, potentially the Giants and the Astros is maybe being better than the Red Sox.
That's what I was thinking too. Those NL West teams slightly above them. Last one for the day, Paul Swanick at Welsh Brewer 70 writes in, come on, guys, the Brewers crushed the Cubs on Monday, including a 10-run eighth inning and no mention on the podcast. How about some love for the Brewers? Love the show, by the way. Love you too, Paul. Let's give the Brewers some love.
Well, it's funny that Paul, you mentioned that. I actually doubled back and I'm looking at the rundown. And the last thing I added was a highlight from the Brewers game because I'm like, we got to have that. And I also was ready to talk today about the Brewers because after hearing Hembo in spring training, I changed my pick. You know, I was going to pick the Cardinals, but I picked the Brewers because Hembo was so adamant that they were the clear favorites. And Hembo's not going to say anything lightly. So I switched my pick. So on Friday, I'm going to give him props, which I really hate doing.
The worst. That dang Hembo. All right, guys, that does it for Bleacher Tweets for the day. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Dave, to Tyler, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight Podcast.